Blog Talk Radio. Don't see as possible because there are certain professions, Because there are certain professions viewed, I guess you're saying basically certain professions are viewed not possible for women. As, oh, I'm sorry, I cut in on my own statement. As male professions that they should, that they could go into that they might not have thought of. End quote.
Okay. Here we go. Okay. Hold on. Started off real early.
Real quick, for me. Not that it should matter, but black or white? She's white. I wouldn't expect that.
So I wasn't going to ask the question because I automatically assumed
she was black.
That's what I'm saying. I assumed she was black. That's a shocker.
That's a shocker. Even more of a shocker. Yeah. Okay.
If you say lineman or quarterback or something, yeah. I got the DB,
the position.
Yeah, no.
Okay. What did you think about it, though? Think about it. Okay.
Ain't no logical reason.
If a female could play on a male football team, I would see corner being the position.
Right.
Safety, no. Linebacker, no. DN, no. No.
I know where you're going with it. And even the coach in this article said something to that extent. You can choose to tackle or the hit or get hit or at cornerback. And he even referenced her to Deion Sanders.
Deion wasn't physical?
Yeah.
At all. And I'm not trying to downplay the position. I'm just saying that's on the defensive side of the ball, that is probably the least physical position. If it's played a certain kind of way, you don't necessarily have to be a physical DB. Corner. I'm a be specific. That's my thought.
What you think, Steve?
If I'm a coach opposing this team, whoever she's got, he's going to have a great game.
You're going to have him?
I'm going to tell Donald.
What now?
She's going to have to prove herself.
What if she
keep doing it. You're going to have to. Either you're going to have 5 or 6 picks or we're going to have a great game on that side. I ain't stopping.
She may force. I feel you. And if I was a coach, I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
She may make that quarterback look pretty bad.
Hey, well,
she does get a couple of tips and mess around and get an interception.
On the serious side of it. What have you done by allowing a female to play on a male team? In collegiate sports, we have ladies basketball, we have men's basketball. Mm-hmm. We have ladies tennis, whatever, we have men. There's a reason why you separate the two. But now from this point forward, any female that walks on any campus, whether she's a legitimate option or not, you can't say no because you open yourself up to discrimination.
I feel you. But the difference from all those other sports that you named, there was a counterpart. Yeah. There was a male in a football. There is no female football team at any college.
I get that. So what I'm saying is I blame the school for this. The answer should have been no, but we will look into starting a female league.
It will never happen.
Well, then no. It never happened. This is a male sport. Like you can't.
No.
So
you can't say football is a male sport.
No. I mean, on a collegiate level, we have male sports and we have female sports. It could be the same sport, but we have different teams.
That's what I'm saying. There's only one football team.
Why can't you have a female football?
I can see the playing. I can tell you right now why not. Because it ain't enough good female players to support a team.
Okay.
That is the main resource of their revenue are sports.
Man.
If you don't have enough
it wasn't worth it.
Players to make it competitive, then, I mean, just because they got a few females that might be able to play football at their school don't mean any other schools. So who they going to play?
I get all that. I understand all that. I promise you I do. But at the end of the day, you have male and female for a reason. Now you blurred that line. You can't go back now.
You would have a legit point if it was a female player that played on a men's basketball team. And they have a female basketball team. Well, no, you know. Then there's no need to have a male and a female basketball team. If we cross that line and let you play because we feel like you're that good.
Okay, say let's go to the professional. There were plenty, I believe, there were some female players who were good enough to play in the NBA, or whether it be a limited role or whatever, right?
Yeah, I agree with you.
So in having to address the issue, I guess that's how the WNBA was born. Why can't we birth a women's collegiate football league? If we have women interested in playing football, we're not just going to automatically put you on a male's team in a male sport where you're competing against nothing but males.
I would have to say that if she was even halfway good enough for them to consider to even put, she got to have some kind of talent. She got to be able to be able to play a little bit. For them, they didn't just say, okay, yeah, you want to try out? Sure, okay, why not? You're on the team. I guarantee she had to show some kind of skill or ability to be put on that team.
Here's where this thing is going to get real ugly.
I already know what you're going to say.
When she's out there on the field and somebody gets a turnover and the ball is going the other way and she catches that you know you ain't supposed to be out here.
Yeah.
Now you feel bad for her because you shouldn't have did that.
I don't
you
feel bad for her. No, I don't feel bad for her. I don't feel bad for her at all. She knew that was possible when she got on the team. So I'm past that.
She's a target.
Yes.
She is a target.
Yeah.
Yes, she is. Well, I guarantee that team's going to protect her too. But is that going to be their downfall? That
probably.
They out so much just to protect her that they not even really playing the game right?
Oh, no. You ain't expecting anything to go like this one, did you?
Yeah. I'm letting y'all go.
You sit here. You brought that as a football
player. Yeah. I let that go.
Football player. So you already knew
that
was going to go.
I don't think it's a good choice. I don't think it was a good call. I really don't.
But hey,
I get it. I respect it. But
risky for all.
End of the day, you got.
It's a Pandora's box. Yeah.
It's risky for all parts. Because if she, I'm sorry, Dad, I'm gonna let you go to your next topic. But if that happens,
that's what I want.
If she gets seriously hurt,
yes,
like career-ending injury,
yeah,
that's gonna open the door for all kinds of lawsuits and all kinds of stuff. You shouldn't have let her on the team in the first place. All that's gonna come boiling out.
It'll be a backlash.
It's gonna be a backlash if she got get out there and get seriously hurt.
Nope, we're better do it.
But other than that though, if she just get cleaned up on a pill back or something, hey.
Look how many players get hurt every year.
Yeah.
Why she chose to do this.
Hey.
And you chose to allow it. So hey, here you go.
On that point, we're gonna let that go on.
Go ahead.
I agree.
Hey, this is what the end of note for. This is kind of the conversation I want to start with the end of note. We're going to move on to the next one. This one look crazy, though. Arizona government agency banned 65-year-old from doing cartwheels.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It says, an energetic 65-year-old community activist who has found herself in some hot water with local government agencies. She was recently sent a letter from the attorney representing Maricopa. Is that, I think that's correct, or Arizona, Maricopa, Association of Government, MAG, MAG, which insisted that she must immediately cease performing cartwheels at MAG meetings. In the letter, the planning agency attorney stated, over many years, the request to stop the cartwheels have been issued due to the potential injuries that they could cause in their disruptive nature. So, in reading the article, what I picked up from it, this is something she do as a ritual to start off these meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the agency is uncomfortable with the lady doing the cartwheels. Now, this is a 65-year-old lady because, one, I guess it disrupts the meeting because the people want to go see it. And two, I guess the dynamic of her maybe getting hurt.
Is she a part of MAG?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the only grounds where I feel like this could be a legitimate call. Because she's part of the association, so they can set rules for their members.
Right.
This is a rule we're going to choose to set right now. Outside of that, how can you stop her from doing what she wants to do? Right.
I would say because she's a member,
yeah, because she's a
you
member.
Have to follow our guidelines and rules, and we're asking you as a member of ours, no, don't do that. Now, if you want to remove yourself
from MAG,
you do backflip, somersault, do everything you want to do.
Because we're no longer responsible if you get injured.
And for the most part, I think that's what it came down to. I don't think it was so much they were trying to stop her from doing what she wanted to. I think it came more down to they had a discretion over the meetings, and that's why she's doing that.
And liability.
Right, right.
You know, we live in a world today where everybody's sued for everything. So liability reasons, I can see them asking her to stop.
And they even go on to say, the letter continues to state, quote, you have from time to time suggested Mag cannot prevent you from performing cartwheels during your comments. That position isn't correct.
Mm.
Basically, this is them telling her her position is incorrect.
Yeah, we can do it. Wrong.
Right, right. And then if authorities allow, this is basically what they were saying, legal authorities allow public bodies to place time and manner restrictions on speakers. So basically, I guess it's at a time when she should be speaking and this is what she do. So because it falls under the meeting, under the guidelines, they can put restrictions on what she's doing. She's telling them, you can't tell me what to do. And I think she's thinking more of a moral standpoint, but you're falling under a body of an agent.
Wait, though, but let's go this route for a second. If you already have a set of rules established, and this is not one of them,
mm-hmm.
can you now, because to counteract my action, can you now go and implement a new rule based on what I do? Ain't that discrimination?
That's her beef.
Yeah.
That's her beef. For me, I think it's more of what they're saying. Now, it's just me playing both sides. But I think more of what the agent is saying is because we have the ability to go and place restrictions on the speaker, it's open to our
discretion.
Right.
I don't know.
That's a thin line.
Yeah,
right,
very thin line.
When I first read the title of it, I thought, this is crazy. Then when I read into it, I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Let's just say it wasn't cartwheel. Let's say she chose to wear a hot pink shirt and hot pink socks.
Yeah.
And you causing a distraction by wearing hot pink. Can we go and implement a rule saying, okay, no more hot pink is allowed? That's discrimination, right?
Right. And that's why I said she has a beef. She has a legitimate beef. I mean, if it's now, this might just hypothetical, but what if it was a 25-year-old? Would you have a problem with the cartwheels now? Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that might be a good angle she can come
from
with her counter or whatever. But other than that, it's too fine of a line. Okay, that's you prevent me from being free to do what I want to say or do, but at the same time, now you are preventing me from keeping control over my meetings and all that. You're disrupting business.
And what you say or do is a direct reflection of Mac.
Right. Right.
Because
right.
you are
right.
part of the
right.
group.
Exactly. Exactly.
I get it, but we'll see. I guess the courts will have
to
figure it out.
Yeah, I go with that one. Moving on to the next topic. Beastie Boys awarded $1.7 million in Monster King. Yep, it's a wrap. The Beastie Boys have won $1.7 million in a copyright violation case against the maker of Monster Energy Drink.
Hmm. Huh.
The two surviving members of the band testified, which I didn't know it was just two surviving members myself, testified about their stunt opposition to the use of their music in commercials endorsement. The Corona, California-based Monster Energy Company had admitted wrongly using Beastie Boys' song in a video that was online for 5 weeks. The beverage maker insisted it should owe no more than $125,000. The Beastie Boys had sought $2 million. Jurors chose to award $120,000 for each of the 10 violations of copyright.
Mm.
They also added an additional $500,000 after finding Monster used the band's persona without permission.
Fine line. Because although I get the Beastie Boys want to get paid for their work.
Right.
And had Monster gone to the Beastie Boys and say, hey, listen, we want to put your music in this video, they probably would have granted it, but they would have had to pay them up for it.
Mm-hmm.
They would have had to pay for it. At the same time, when was the last time you were relevant?
True.
You know what I mean? Like, we just pay him homage, kind of.
Yeah.
Like,
you can even take it as a respectful thing or me showing that I appreciate your music and I'm putting you back out there. or you can capitalize them.
And that's what they chose.
Yeah.
In a world where everybody wants the suit.
Okay.
Thank you. This is where we are.
Thank you. In a world where everybody likes the suit, what was Monster thinking?
I don't know.
Why did you think you could get away with?
Because it's probably the same thing T said. They thought they weren't relevant. So much so they figured they weren't even.
But that depends on the crowd, though, because, I mean, me personally, Beastie Boys are still relevant. I mean, they just put out an album, what, less than 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, they just put out an album.
Yeah,
that did pretty good. So they were pretty good rappers for their genre, I call it.
Yeah.
But Monster was crazy for even trying that.
Yeah, Monster, I don't know what everything.
This will blow my mind too. Okay, let's say TOAB decides we're going to sponsor an event.
Right.
And we want to play some of our favorite music.
Mm-hmm.
Is TOAB then open to the same repercussions that Monster got?
Well, the difference is we're not advertised, not endorsed. Man, on national TV.
We're not selling something.
Well, I create.
It's an event. We're sponsoring an event.
No, they basically had an online commercial.
So this was part of their marketing campaign.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference right there.
That's not if TOAB decides to do an advertisement and say we put in a song that we had permission for it, yeah, we're getting in trouble for copyright.
Especially if we had some kind of success.
Yeah.
If we made some money off of it. Oh, yeah. Oh, damn. Yeah, definitely. I'm going to sue the hell out of them.
Hmm. Okay. Well.
And nobody might not even say that as long as we are not relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But once we blow up, you've got a lawsuit coming now from whoever that is music you use because now they need to see you in a position where they can get them.
And then and you said it had played for like 5 weeks.
Yeah, 5 weeks.
So it had 5 weeks of exposure.
On
five,
the internet.
5 weeks of to gain popularity, they probably saw it themselves.
Had to.
Yeah. Somebody notified them.
Somebody that's in close connection with them.
And you made a good point, too, T. A Monster would have came out better asking them up front. They probably lost way more money than they would have to pay.
That's crazy for them to put themselves in that position.
Yeah, what was anything? That's a good question.
Probably that this wouldn't come back to bite us. Probably that they would appreciate the fact that We are showing them some love by playing their music in our campaign.
Imagine, and I get your point. If we had a jingle we've been saying or a phrase or something we put together for our opening and you heard it on a Nike campaign and Nike ain't said nothing to us. We watching the new LeBron James Gatorade commercial and we hear Thoughts of a Brother song. How would you feel then, T?
Well, I done did something.
So you wouldn't feel as if Nike owe you nothing?
No. I wouldn't. That's just me.
I'm going to be like, man, that's cool. That's straight. They're using stuff. All right, but they all, no, we need to talk to them. No, we would need to talk to them.
I appreciate the support, the love,
yeah,
and the fact that you like it. But you making money off
it. Yeah. No.
And I put my work in for it.
2014.
I want to sue you. I just think we need to
have business. Exactly. We don't necessarily need to go the whole route.
Because if I'd have went away and said, just do it, you would have came at me and I ain't got nothing.
Without it, in a fraction of a heartbeat, homeboy.
Okay, so would you have felt better if they had let it be known that we got this slogan from TOAB? You still ain't getting no money from it, but we heard this on the radio through this online talk show. Blah,
and they
blah,
came
blah.
To me. They had to come to me first.
Before they did it.
Yeah, I think that's out of respect.
But if it boils down to either you paying me and using it or not paying me and not using it, then if you're not going to pay me, then you're not going to use it. That's how I would feel, and I would have to be overruled in the three.
Well, I'm already two against one.
And we always like to say two against one. So that would have to be a two against one on now.
Not going
to
be
for
bad.
Me.
Hey, well, I
can be friends. And listen, you done put your basically your belief out there, so they don't know it ain't got nothing to do with you.
Hey, man, let me put this out. If y'all go through the fight and get paid, please leave.
Oh, no. We already know that. We already know that.
Yeah, because we're going to go in that fight for all three of us.
We're
going to
sit there.
We're
going to go in and be like, he talking now. But wait till you get paid.
I'm going to be like, look, man, I ain't even want to fight y'all. We getting what?
Yeah.
already know. All right, man. Moving on to our last topic for ending up. And like we always do, we try to close up with something positive and something enlightening. Michael Sam, the linebacker who was signed by St. Louis Rams, says he has no issues fitting in with the St. Louis Rams. Michael Sam's confident he will be judged on performance. He stated he has not had any awkward moments in the locker room and that he has been accepted right away. Sam stated, and I quote, "They respect me as a human being and as a football player," end quote. I thought that was a great statement because I think in anything we do, we may not agree with the other person or the other individual, but we need to be open to letting people be people and understanding who they are, you know? I think at the end of the day, to discriminate against somebody because I don't agree what they're doing is not right. What? Discriminate if they're doing something wrong or not positive, that's different. But if there's nothing wrong with your understanding to the point that it offends me and you just want to do something, why should I say no to you? Because everybody don't agree with what I want to do.
I think what it boils down to in the end is his behavior.
Yeah.
And let me explain. I know that sounds crazy, but as long as he goes in there, into the locker room when I say that, and does not try to do anything to go against the grain, then they'll accept him all day long as a football player just by talent, and that everything would be fine. But if he was to go in there and rock the boat, and this might be a little sign of my homophobia, call it whatever you want to call it, but I know the nature of a locker room. There are times when there are naked men walking around.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel as long as you...
It's hard, man.
But what it boils down to is how he acts in the locker room will determine any kind of discrimination he may run across.
What'd you say?
Stop right there.
When does preseason start?
The season start by September, so it gotta be about like
end of July, something like that.
Yeah.
End of August. Well, I think it is good.
We'll see how it play out.
Nope. You see what you're doing in the preseason. Outside of that, I don't care. They accept you, great. Don't accept you, great. I don't care. We're just gonna do what we're gonna do.
You shook your hand.
I'm done with
just play.
It. Play football.
I agree.
I can care less how they treat you in the locker room. I can care less. That's just me personally. Treat you like a king or treat you like a queen. I don't care.
Oh, man. Well, that's a good way to close up the day.
There you go.
We're going to close it up with that. We're moving to today's title of the show, which is Black History is Not Limited to February. We had this show to do, actually. The whole basis and premise of this show was to do in February.
Uh-huh.
And things happened, and
we got away from it.
And then we came back to it because it was still a show out there, and we said, well, you know, at the end of the day, why we got to just celebrate Black History in February? You know what I'm saying? So we felt the need to go ahead and do this on, what is this, June 8th? Black History is every day. Black History is always in the making. As long as we as a people are alive, our history is being made. And that's what it's about. Our first subtopic is Black inventors. So all of us have some inventors we'll throw out there. T, you want to go first or Bone, you got it?
If you don't mind.
Go ahead. Go for it.
I came across this originally on my cousin's Facebook page. David Boston, what up, cuz? I'm out there in Atlanta chilling out. And I honestly knew the majority, but there were some ones that I wasn't familiar with. And just doing a little background on them, came to my own opinion, but I'll leave that for later. But first gentleman I wanted to touch on was Mr. Frederick M. Jones. All right, Frederick M. Jones was the inventor of several inventions. But one of the more popular ones was the air conditioning unit. Mm. All right.
Mm.
I'm sorry. Another one that Mr. Frederick M. Jones was involved in was a
sorry for you. Like both of y'all have Frederick Jones.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's
okay,
done,
well
he's
then go right ahead then.
No, go ahead.
Because there were some other ones I wanted to touch on, but you know.
No, you know the refrigeration system in general.
Yeah,
that was it.
So it's even it's the house AC system. Is that correct?
Anything that involves refrigeration, or air conditioning,
refrigerator,
deep freezer,
yeah. All of it stems from his invention, which is refrigeration.
Wow.
Yeah.
The whole word then belongs to him. Basically, and I mean, all about something with something else. Wow.
What I came across, and it had a little, what you call this, like a little write-up about it.
Yeah. Not
says he's one of the most prolific black inventors ever. He patented more than 60 inventions.
Wow.
So he's best known for inventing an automatic refrigeration system for long haul trucks. You know,
wow.
Like when they
move
food
yeah.
and all that.
Yeah.
It was roof mounted. He was the first person to invent a practical mechanical refrigeration system for trucks, railroad cars, and all that, which eliminated food from spoiling on long-distance trips. But he, like BJ said, he's more than, he has over 60 different patents for inventions.
Yeah, man. But see, that speaks to, like, the inventor, that the fact that both of y'all went out and found him. I think I even ran across him myself. But you see Frederick, you automatically put it with Doug.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, maybe I kind of, I was scanning through the stuff, so I kind of passed him up. But I seen the refrigerator, and I was like, wow. I think Bone even mentioned that to me before. My first inventor is Henrietta Bradbury. She was a Chicago housewife, but she decided not to sit idle in her time at home, and she actually patented and invented the bed rack, the whole bed, the system of the
rail,
rack and the rail and the headboard, all that.
Yeah.
A Chicago housewife, she patented in 1943. And I would assume bed rack before then, but if we look back at things, they were more made out of a wooden frame, than the rack that we know of today.
Yeah.
So just think about that on the level of, like, our wives sitting at home. Do you really think my wife or your wife, Bone, would be sitting at home and we'll come home and find a bed rack?
Yeah.
Which speaks, I can't say outside of my own culture, but it speaks to my culture and what I know. I really can't sit here and say to you, any woman I know or grew up with,
right,
if I came home and they had invented something, it would surprise me. So, yeah, that's true. See, no, you not.
Okay. I got a lot of stuff that we don't think about.
Right.
That we use, but we don't think about. Like the mailbox.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
Philip Downing developed and created the street drop mailbox with the hinges and all of that outside your house. They can drop the mail right outside your house. Convenience. Like, again, things we take for granted.
Yeah.
I remember a time when growing up in Rapunzel, anybody had no mailbox. You had to go to the post office to get your mail. Y'all don't remember that?
Yeah.
Miss Fair. Done been sent up there several times. Go there to the mailbox.
Get the mail. You gotta remember, there ain't no key.
Right.
You gotta remember. Well, yeah, it was a key.
But you still had to remember your box number.
Now, I just walk outside to the end of the road, pick up your mail.
Think back on, this is showing our age.
Yeah.
And it's crazy being 2014 that we even have this memory, but do you remember the big deal it was when we first got mailboxes?
Yes, I do. Because
it was a big deal.
Before that, we had to go to South
Mill. Yeah. It was a big deal when Roboni got mailbox and paved road and street lights.
Yeah.
Don't walk those dark pine streets any night in Roboni, boy, before we got street lights.
Remember dirt
and rocks. That's crazy.
It wasn't no speeding out there once upon a time.
No, yeah, you weren't no speed if you wanted to, because
right.
You
had
don't know the potholes. Yeah, you rode slow in Rabona. Basically, yeah.
Don't wash your car.
Nobody washed their car.
But what?
And Amaral and that dirt road was, I was like all in one.
Okay.
Boom, it's on you,
me. All right. My next inventor is Mr. Charles R. Drew.
Oh, man, he's taking all my.
Yeah, hey, man, we got that. We're just going to keep going. I mean, we got enough inventors in our culture. I promise you.
Exactly. Well, Mr. Charles Drew was the inventor of the blood plasma bath. I think he was, cool, hit me out. He was from Baltimore, wasn't it?
I don't know where he was from.
No, he was born June 3rd, 1904, died in April 1st, 1950. But he was an American physician, surgeon, and medical researcher. And he invented the blood plasma bag.
Yeah. You know what the thing about that is, we don't really most of the time project ourselves have anything to do with medicine as a culture.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We just don't figure that. But you have a lot of scientists and heart surgeons. What is it, Gifted Hands, the movie?
Mm-hmm.
On the heart bypass thing. Mm-hmm. He was a black man. It's a lot of us in that. But a lot of credit, and it's just sad to say, and I'm not trying to blame nobody or putting it out there or trying to make this
just
a bad
world, thing. The way the world was.
Yeah, a lot of it because the masses were white or other colors or other ethnicities, they took the credit for a lot of stuff that was invented, you know? So much so that these people probably invented this in this time, and because they thought it just had done nothing, and somebody else took the credit for it and built it up to something else, don't even know the reflection that they ever made.
And I hesitated to say it earlier, but the thing I noticed, at least for my first two inventors, they were very light, very fair-skinned African-American.
Yeah.
And back in those days, I could see that maybe kind of opening the door a little more my black behind. I would not.
Right.
But what kind of bag? Okay, if it was a great idea, they wouldn't even take it into consideration.
They could have been a
corporate bag. Right. It wouldn't care. And then as soon as they turn me away, go back inside and say, hey, I got a great idea.
True. Very true. My next inventor, he looking at me crazy because I think I took another one of his inventors, but it's George Crumb. George Crumb invented, was the first person to come up with potato chips,
yeah.
The bag of potato chips. I always thought potato chips for some reason, and I guess I just put this together and I don't know, it's going to sound crazy, came from France with French fries, just for some reason.
No.
I think I thought that because you fry French fries, and I know potato chips fry, so I just put that together. But I never knew that.
Are French fries from France?
Well, I don't know.
What they call them, man.
I don't know for sure. I just, you know.
But I was just saying, that's a good question.
I wonder where French fries is, actually.
That's what I'm saying.
Could it be a black man or a black woman doing that?
You know what I'm saying?
It's probably good, though.
But that's what this stems from. It says that he had a customer who was complaining that his French fries was too thick. So he got tired of the man complaining, and he cut them real thin, fried them up, salted them, or whatever. He did it kind of out of sarcasm.
Right.
Mm.
And the dude turned around and liked it and was recommending that everybody get their fries this way, and it's like, potato chips.
That's what's up, man. I mean, but see, this is, like you said earlier, see, it's the things that we have that we don't even realize where they come from because we just take for granted we have.
Yeah. It's here. I don't care where it came from.
And it starts in the kitchen. And I think that's why I come back to we saying we don't, well, some of us start as far as the food. But, you know, the creative nature alone starts in the home. And it may be from watching mama in the kitchen create something. There's a lot of dishes that are created that lives in certain cultures, but they spread out. You know what I mean? Like you got chitlins, all that's a cultural thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
But you may have somebody else intrigued to try it, which came from something that was invented in a black kitchen.
Think of that. And our ancestors, slaves, basically were given scraps to eat.
Right.
And
right.
A lot of these traditional black meals were where they used their creativity
mm-hmm.
and their invention to make something bad
good.
Yeah. True. Like slaughtering a pig.
Yeah.
Right.
You gonna slaughter this pig, you're gonna bring me that, you're gonna bring me the ham, you're gonna bring me the bacon, you're gonna bring the sausage, you're gonna do it. We'll throw you the
scrap.
You eat the intestine.
Mm-hmm. Let me show you something though. I'm okay. gonna make you want the intestine.
No problem.
Okay. If that's all I got to eat. I'm making the best of what I got.
These pig tails.
Yeah, pig
tails. Give me the knuckles.
Yeah.
Big knuckles.
I gotta eat the ears.
All of them.
I can't get a piece of sausage. Okay,
yeah.
No problem.
Neck bone.
Neck bone. If you think about that, why would you give somebody the neck
bone? Well, is there any meat? I'm coming from someone that does not eat neck bones. Is there any meat on the neck bone?
I'm fat on neck.
You
don't
eat neck bones?
I don't eat neck bones.
I don't eat chitlins.
I eat chitlins, right?
Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah, you eat some bologna.
You know what bologna is?
Bologna was not that.
Big is that. It's basically...
You eat a hot dog.
That's
yeah.
everything
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
You eat a hot dog.
Hey, but I take my everything else. I can't eat the ear, though. I can't
yeah.
eat the ear.
You want to eat the ear?
No, I ain't the ear.
What about the pickles? You
eat
pickle feet?
Eating,
I mean, like,
I
you know pig feet, the pickles.
No.
You eat them all? You want to eat them? Hot sauce?
I eat hot sauce.
Hot sauce is a different.
I want to eat hot sauce. A pickled egg. I don't want my sausage in no juice.
It's
I don't care what it is. I don't want it in that. I want my sausage.
Who knows y'all gonna see that look? You just came to.
I want my sausage on the grill. I want to kill it. That's what I want my sausage in
no juice. And look at you like you were crazy. I think
okay.
so. Because if you ain't going there, you're going. Because I don't eat eggs, right? I don't eat hard-boiled eggs. So I can't see me eating no pickled egg either.
You don't eat boiled eggs?
No, I don't eat boiled
eggs. Okay. I can see this. You don't eat boiled eggs. I eat a boiled egg.
Quickly.
What's wrong with
that?
You got no taste to it.
Eat that yolk.
It's about like you think about lettuce.
Oh, okay.
You, it's about like boiled eggs. What's
man,
the point?
Lettuce don't taste like nothing.
But try to go in the bathroom with boiled
egg. Egg got a little bit of taste.
Yeah, egg. I mean, a boiled egg don't taste much different than a scrambled egg. It's an egg.
Oh.
If you cook it without putting the salt and the pepper in it, don't cook it in no butter. Just scramble the egg. It tastes just like a boiled egg, just a different form.
That grill, that stove, that pan, something does something different for me than eating just the egg. I don't know what it is, though. Because, the yolk, like you say, right? Wait, the yolk. The white part is the yolk. No, the yolk is the yolk.
Yeah, you got the egg white.
Egg white has no taste to it.
No.
The yolk for me is almost powdery. So much so.
Turn
you
off.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Okay.
I guess it's just dry. And
it's not like a texture thing.
Yeah,
maybe. More than anything.
And that's what I think. That's what I take when you say you don't like lettuce. You know, I see lettuce more in texture.
No, my mother like him with lettuce because it's nothing.
It's nothing. He said,
that's what you water. What does it do? You gotta put everything on it for it to taste like something. What is it for?
That's true.
Hey man, look, let's just get on to this.
Yeah. We've been in the big time. Who's on T?
Yeah, I'm a homeboy T.
Elijah McCoy.
Where is Elijah McCoy?
Elijah McCoy. He's a mechanical engineer. Got a lot of high quality industrial inventions on this day. But most notably is the steam engine lubricator. Not the steam engine itself, but the lubricator. But the reason why I thought he was interesting, because we use the phrase, the real McCoy. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
It came from his name and his inventions, and it It's basically meaning something high quality or authentic. That's the real one.
Wow, that's nice. That's how it works. You know, the more you go look into history, the more you'll find out where a lot of catchphrases we say and the meaning. Because I remember, I can't remember it verbatim, so I won't go too far into it. But it was something about, I went to the gambling plantation right there in Ellicott, and they was telling a story, and they explained why you turning the butter. Something, it was something, I can't remember. It may come from the later. So we'll just move forward.
We were talking about that with cream of the crop.
Yeah.
We never realized why we say cream of the crop.
Yeah, it is. And churning the butter, and they said the cream will come to the top. That's what it was. Yeah. You're right. Yeah, and he was explaining, like, that's what this was. When they would be sitting there, and they were showing you, like, the kitchen area was off, where the kitchen was off, and then it was a little area where the slaves prepared the food that was off from the actual kitchen. So even so they was fixing the food, they couldn't go in the kitchen. They had another area back off in the back where it almost looked like, and it was like if you go out on the garage of a house or a carport, that's where you sit. And it was boxed off though, but you know, boxed it in, but it was bare as a garage. And then they would walk through a door, which would be the actual kitchen. When you walk in the kitchen, it's like you don't walk into a mansion. When you walk back out to where they were preparing the food, where the slaves could be to prepare the food for the preparation, it was, you know, looked like a carport.
I want to ask y'all something real quick. Being that you brought up the plantation and, you know, we were raised around it. We've seen it numerous times. I've never visited that place. I've never had a desire to visit that place. And when you told me you went, I kind of questioned your desire. Like, why would you want to go to that? So then I thought about it and I'm like, okay, am I looking at it from a negative perspective? My reasoning was, I don't want to go and relive or have an idea of the way you used to make us live.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that should die because we don't necessarily have to live, quote unquote, that way. But then looking at it from another perspective is like, I guess you can kind of look at it the same way we look at the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might say, well, why would you want to be reminded of the cross?
Jesus' pain and suffering.
Yeah, why would you want
to?
Exactly. But on the other hand, it's symbolic of our freedom.
Yeah.
It's symbolic of the struggle that somebody else had to go through for you to have those
freedoms. Yeah. And that was basically for me, because I took my kids so they could see it, so they could understand. Because slavery to them may not be as relevant as it is to us. You know what I mean? In that standpoint. So for them to see it and actually get an up close look at it, for me it was letting them see you didn't get here just off of a hope. It was somebody put something in, and this is where your people come from. This is your foundation.
Was that your first time visiting?
That was my first time ever going. I felt the same way you did prior to that, but getting older and understanding the openness and understanding I had to let my children see things that they're not getting open to that we were, because the generation is different. And two, it comes back to number three in the God of four. Always remember yesterday so we can sustain today. You have to remember your past so you can understand why you're here today. So for me, that's what I get out of it now. Now, before, I was just like, you know, G, I was like, man, I don't see no plantation. Matter of fact, I still have a problem with the word plantation.
Yeah, to be honest
with you, I still do.
I even told you, I probably shouldn't say this out there like that, but I'm meek and I'm going to say it. When you told me you went, I was like, man, I wish somebody would burn that place down.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you should.
You know what I mean? Like, why we ain't burnt that down
yet? You should have.
Because I was looking at it from perspective. Somebody wants to keep us reminded of where I can't place you.
Yeah.
I was looking at it the wrong way. And I guess that's where perspective always plays an important part. Yeah, it can look that way if that's the way you choose to look at it.
You gotta make the good. You gotta make bad look. You allow God to restore the good in
your man. Yeah. So now I can ride by that place and be like, I appreciate what somebody else had to go through.
Mm-hmm. Now I can ride down this road and look over there.
Exactly. I'm in a car riding by and have the freedom to stop in and if I choose to and walk out.
Yep.
They never had those freedoms.
Nope.
Sorry, I didn't mean to
send it. No,
Black history, man.
Black history, so I mean, it falls in the line. I don't know who the niggas is, you know, the thing's on Bone.
On
yeah.
me.
What you got for him, Bone?
I have Mr. Henry Sampson. Henry T. Sampson, creator of the cellular car phone.
Oh, for real?
Yes.
Yeah. See, this is what I'm talking about. You knew that, dude?
Born 1934 out of Jackson, Mississippi. Educated at Purdue University, Morehouse College University of California as well.
What's up? I didn't know that.
At all.
I didn't know that.
Again, showing that age, we remember car phones.
Yeah, that's when it was big. And that was the only mobile phone outside of pay phone or house phone.
Right? Yeah, you had a car. You had a phone in your car.
Yeah,
you was
rich.
Right?
Yeah. You were.
Straight up. You was rich.
You was rich.
Yeah, that's real talk.
I aspire to be like you because you got a phone in your car. That don't work. Call somebody. Let me see.
Yeah. Let me use your phone. And the first thing they say, nah, man, you don't know how much the car to use that phone, man.
Right.
That's for business.
Yeah.
They probably ain't never even used
I wouldn't even hooked up, but it's there.
Yeah.
If I want to hook it up.
All they had to do was be there.
Wow.
That's what's up, though. I never knew that, you know, African-American man was credited with inventing that.
Oh, it's cool, man. I move on.
That goes
go
back
ahead.
To black people want to shine. It's just in our nature.
We invented it. That's it. I mean, not saying that no other race or creed or nationality is not. It's a lot of inventors, if you go back and look through history, like we did on researching the show, it is a wealth, a plethora of black inventors. I didn't know that. And it's things that is simple stuff that we use every day that I didn't know. I don't even know if somebody will get to this, but I just thought about it. I just learned recently, I think, a black inventor who invented detergent.
Detergent?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said it because I don't have it, but I'm going to look it up for sure to make sure if I'm correct. But I'm going to move on to my next inventor, which is Merriam Benjamin. His invention was the gong and the single chair. Now, imagine we take chairs for granted and we just figure somebody put it together, but you know, a single and a gong chair is kind of like the head of the table chair. It's the real... like at a dining table.
Mm-hmm.
That interest of a chair.
The high back one?
Yeah. And it says, Benjamin's chair allowed hotel patrons to some waiters by pushing a button attached to the back. So the chair had a little more to it than I even knew. And it says, the signal would buzz the waiter station and light upon appearing on the chair. Wow. Letting the waiters know who they needed to serve. Wow. Now you have the little things where actually, this would be good today.
Yeah.
Because now you got to wait on the way to, hey, excuse me,
yeah,
hey,
that's one.
This would actually be good today. And you know, and looking at this, there's no date of his death or his birth. So he invented this, and I'm not sure if it's much known on him.
Hmm.
Isn't that strange? Yeah. It says date of birth and death unknown.
What?
But that goes to show also how lightly we were taken back in those days, too. You know, his popularity, I mean, it's one of them things like you always say that he got his popularity after his death.
Yeah.
You know, so much so that he's basically a nobody.
Nobody, yeah. His whole life.
His whole life, really.
And maybe years and years and years after that.
Right.
Because to us, well, I know to me for sure, to the day, I didn't know this. I didn't even know this chair existed. Now I'm thinking, why is it not in
you.
Applebee's? You know what I mean? You got you can play a game from the table. You got these little buzzers
you
get
us
when
you're
ready. Why can't we? Why can't Applebee's did have some you could buzz them at one time? Did they?
Say that again?
Applebee's had like a little, that little thing they should sit on your table, you can push it and they're supposed
they
to.
Did.
Yeah,
they did. Was it Red Lobster? Red Lobster?
Somebody, I know somebody had it. It might have been more than one. I'm not sure.
Yeah, see, but they too busy then. They can't do their other job requirements and duties if they got to go to the table every time somebody presses a button.
And like you're saying, back in these days.
Yes, but in today's day when businesses are trying to save money, okay, why would I hire a dishwasher and a waitress when that waitress, if she doesn't have that many tables, can wash those dishes, save me money? I'm just looking from it from the business standpoint.
You know what I mean?
I guess.
It makes sense. And the other side of it, too, is back in the days when he invented this, guess who the waitresses and the table tenders were? They were the slaves.
Yeah.
So I can buzz you all I want to. Who cares about your time?
Right.
So, you know, that plays into it, too. And then it could play into, we take that scenario out. Back then, they were just more polished when they sat down and ate. They wasn't bothering you like they was infants, I should say. Not trying to call them out or say nothing wrong, but I'm saying we are a nation right now of spoiled brats. We used to thinking that everything should come to us, and that's how it's supposed to be, which we always say.
Microwave.
Yeah, microwave. On you, T.
Yeah, on that note, we're going to go to Mr. Garrett Morgan, Garrett Augustus Morgan. Credited with patenting the traffic signal. His more notable invention was the gas mask. And that was the idea behind the gas mask, was so that they had something to assist in going to help people who get trapped in mines. He ended up he was contracted by the military, the army, to produce gas masks.
Wow. I didn't know that. I did not know that. I wore a gas mask and had a gas mask.
You didn't care who created it.
Yeah.
You didn't know what it
was. You had it.
Now, if I'd have known that back then, I would have been talking much trash and probably wearing it more happily, because I'm going to be honest with you, we hated that junk. To put them on, man. Wow. But, wow. I didn't know that.
Yes.
I would have never thought that either. Just, I don't know.
Half the things I looked at, I would have never thought that. You know, well, how would we be put in that position? I say we, like I created. An African-American be put in that situation
that's
where
we.
He even had to
create
something.
But I mind. And I know I'm generalizing this a lot because I'm speaking from my own personal stance, but when I say our minds, I relate to my people.
Right.
So that's just what it is. And it's not me discriminating, it's just me relating to what I know. Our minds move like that. We always, because you know what? I believe it comes from our struggle.
Mm-hmm.
We've been imprisoned so long, either mentally or physically, that we've always fought to find a way to make a way. You know what I mean? Basically, to make a way out of nowhere.
That goes back to, for me, finding the good in your struggle.
Yeah.
All of these things, I'm inclined to believe, was because people were either in a position or knew somebody in a position that they needed to find a way to do something better.
Yeah.
They needed to find a way to better what they're forced.
Because they were just, you were saying they were using it to go help find people in mind.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, they probably sunk the black people into the mine, knowing that there's gas in there. I'm going to risk your life before I risk mine.
Exactly.
So me as a black man, knowing that I'm risking my life every time I go in this mine, I'm going to do something to help me in that struggle.
Yeah.
I see.
Totally agree. Once again, man, I'm going to put this out there. I'm learning a lot on this show.
Undisputed.
I'm learning a lot on this show. And he said, undisputed, undefeated, no recipe to be beat. You always win, man. You always win. And it's a beautiful feeling walking in every day knowing. It's a beautiful feeling. Bone, it's on you, Anna.
It's on me.
What you got? Because I guess, where we at?
We had about an hour.
Yeah, so we're T ready to transition after this inventor, going to the Black Historic.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with it. I mean, I think they kind of go hand in hand anyway, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, go ahead and get my last one in. Then Mr. Alexander Miles. Mr. Alexander Miles is the inventor of the elevator. I did not know that.
Elevator.
All this stuff makes sense.
It kind of makes you feel, it heightens your sense of pride.
Yes, it does. It does. And what bothers me more than anything else, I think, the more I'm hiding my, it heightens me in pride. It upsets me internally, the fact that I gave credit outside of where it could have been given. You know what I mean? That's a conscious thing, but it's the truth.
Instinctively, you just assume that we ain't do that. We had nothing to do with that. All we did was work on it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we did it. And turn around being the one to work it, yeah.
Probably because we don't know who knew how to work.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And what goes back to, we always say, what's good is made to look as bad, which when you really think about it, I'm working my operation. This is what I invented.
I did.
Why shouldn't I stand here and man this elevator? But
you look at it as the green.
Yeah.
I got to stand there and push the button for you.
Yeah.
No. Allow me to work my invention.
Yeah. Ain't nobody else going to sit down here and do TOAB. It's ours. No. So it makes sense.
I would think if I was in that situation as an elevator operator, if I knew a black man created it, I would have a little more pride about being the operator.
Yeah.
I can see how that could be lost after a few generations, initially,
initially.
I'm proud to sit here and bring you up and down, press a button for you and pull a lever.
It's ours.
It's ours.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, then stairs or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And we might have created them.
One way or the other, you want to use one of them.
What you want to do?
Wow. I'm in out there business. And I thought this was interesting. We all know Jack Johnson, right?
Boxer.
Right. I did not know Jack Johnson created the Johnson wrench, the action wrench that's used, you know, to work on stuff and fix cars with. He was in prison for taking his female, fiance across the line, and they imprisoned him for it. And while in prison, he needed a tool, it says, that would help him tighten and loosen the fastening devices. So he came up with the patent, and matter of fact, it's the first wrench, which is, I mean, that's cool, man. I did not know that. And a wrench is not something easy. You know what I mean? As far as, like, the device, let me get this picture. I know the radio world can't see it, but a wrench is basically, you know, the one where a pipe wrench.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say it like that. Like you'll see a plumber with the big, huge, the C cup on it. That's a wrench. So, I mean, that wasn't no easy device because it adjusts to make and put together. And he did it at a time of adversity because he was in prison. And he was in prison for something that now we would look at and laugh at.
You said across the line or across the state line?
State line. Because, you know, he was considered the Great White Hope back then because he beat Tommy Burns, and it was a real uproar. He was hated because he was an African-American or a black champion, and he had dethroned the Great White Hope. It's crazy, but that's it for the inventors. I mean, it's a lot more out there.
Go ahead, one more.
You got another one?
No, so we're going to transition to the...
But that's it for that. I mean, but listen, if you ever get the time, got nothing else going on, just want to look it up. Black inventors, unknown black inventors, or just black inventors, a black hero, you will see a list that goes on and on and on. It's a lot of stuff out there. We just kind of tapped the tip of the iceberg. We didn't do nothing with it, to be honest with you. So now we'll move on into history, black history, historical things that based back to the black culture and African-American in general. And I know T don't like the fact that I keep using that. And I'm thinking about the African-American thing, because we constantly use black. Because black is black.
I said black and corrected myself and said African-American.
Yeah, it is like African-American. And T said, you're African-American?
Yeah. What is that?
Yeah, but we can't go into that because we got a show coming up on that, so we won't go too deep into that. But we'll let you ponder on that for a minute. We're going to go into our into the history. See, you got some bone, you got some jumping off.
Just, you know, some people might know. I'm sure some are going to know this because they're part of it. I didn't know it, so I figured it might be a little interesting for some who might be interested in this kind of stuff. But the oldest black sorority.
Hmm.
Anyone of y'all know what it is?
Yeah.
What it is?
It's Alpha.
Yeah.
And, but it's the females, right?
Yeah.
The Alpha females. Yeah, yeah.
Alpha Kappa. Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority was the first black Greek sisterhood founded in 1908, Howard University.
I knew that because, of course, I've seen that too in my research. That's the only reason I knew it. If you would have asked me, I think I probably would have said alpha male.
Yeah, that's what I think I would have said.
Just because they have more lineage to historical black polished figures. I know that sounds judgmental, but the truth, I mean, Martin Luther King, Reverend Martin Luther King is alpha himself. So.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
Nope.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. If you don't go look for yourself, there's a lot of stuff we don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true. Bone, you want me to go take it next? Or?
Yeah, man, go ahead.
I'll go next. LBJ, which is Lyndon B. Johnson, civil rights legend. A lot of people don't know this. And this is a historical fact that I'm going to be correct with this, so I'm going to say the right date, and I think it's 1964, so I'm going to make sure that I'm on the right thing. Lyndon B. Johnson signed the passing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 basically was the end of segregation for real. Separate but equal and all that was all stated and said, but when it was actually put into law that we had rights as people in America, the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was signed. It was signed by Lyndon B. Johnson, which was the successor, the predecessor, no, successor, yeah, the successor of JFK, John F. Kennedy, who had said he was going to do this anyway, if time were permitted. So I thought that was very historical because even in when you go back and look in the history, LBJ and the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King was very close too. They worked hand in hand. So he was a president that was in touch with what was going on. And he was willing to put himself out there because you got to think about it. The Republicans and the world at that time, we got a black president today and you see how the world acts. We talking about in 1964. So he had a lot of opposition to say, no, I'm going to give them rights. And I think that was his story. I think that was profound, to be honest, no matter what he may have done on the backside of that. And I even say that to the Emancipation Proclamation. I think people kind of try to downgrade and say, well, Lincoln had to free the slaves. It doesn't matter. He freed them. And for him to stand out there and make that decision, I think regardless of what the backlash, whatever it may have been, or what he benefited from it, he freed people.
Some people may say it was a mistake that he didn't intend to do.
Yeah.
You know, depending on your ass. But.
And that's the thing. It's always pushed back and forth. Then they say, well, Lincoln was this and that. It's always a bad time. But the truth of the matter is history speaks for itself. So on you, Chief. I guess, and you were born.
All right. Well, I'm going to go this route with the holiday we just had.
Yeah.
We just celebrated. A lot of us don't know where it came from, but Memorial Day was first recognized by blacks in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah.
From the story here, it was to honor the black people who fought and died in the Civil War, which was the war with the Confederates and the
Union. Mm-hmm.
Many people thought it was simply a celebration for that same Emancipation Proclamation.
Right, right.
I can't never say that
proclamation
that you were talking about. But no, it was a gathering of black people to, like I said, recognize and memorialize the lives lost in that war. Either way, it goes on record as being the first widely
celebrated
memorial service.
Yeah.
And that's where our Memorial Day that we now celebrate.
As a nation.
Yeah.
That I ran across that too. When I seen it, I was like, wow. And just coming off it. Because, you know, a lot of times, the synonymousness of Memorial Day and Veterans is linked. And it's not necessarily the same thing.
That's why you have a veteran.
Yeah, that's why it's two different days. Just because I'm a veteran don't mean I can... I'm supposed to be congratulated for Memorial, because a memorial means you're not here.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, and I'm conscious of that now, and I wasn't so conscious of that before I went to war myself. That's why I'm explaining it. I'm not explaining it to, you know, say somebody that don't get it. I'm being honest. I didn't understand the whole understanding of it. I thought it was just a military holiday. So that meant if you was in the military, we celebrated. After war, I understood the difference of a memorial. And... Yeah. They should, there's no question in my mind that that day is relevant. You know what I'm saying? Memorializing somebody who, this is, and I say this all the time, the most impactful thing I ever did in my life, and I didn't even understand it when I was doing it, is when I raised my hand and I said, I promise to defend against this nation, against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I didn't realize what I was saying. I swear to on the Bible that I would give my life.
Yeah.
I swear that's the biggest commitment you can ever make in life. And my ticket got called one day. Some people don't. But if my ticket never got called, I would have never understood what I said that day. And I'm thankful that my ticket got called. Because when my ticket got called, now I realize I'm able to sacrifice it all when I have to. But something I didn't understand then. So think about how hard I go for God now.
Well, I want you to be clear on what you mean by your ticket, because I feel like that's a military
lingo.
And, you know, a lot of people listening may not really quite understand. So, what do you mean by when you say your ticket was called?
When I say my ticket was called, I mean I had to go to war. It went from practicing, because this is what the military really is. The setup is we train all the time preparing for war. But in the 90s, when I went in 99, nobody thought it was a war coming. We was in Clinton years. Clinton was going out, but it was, the economy was booming. Money was still, it was good. You just go get a job, you become disciplined, you come back home. That's what the military is about. Come up, now I'm in war, now you understand. You understand your life. This is what you said when you signed up. It wasn't just I'm signing up to go to college. I'm signing up to put on a uniform. No, I said I would protect against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I would give my life for this country. And when that happens and you have to go and put your boots in the sand, i.e. Iraq, it's a different story. And like I'm saying to you now, I didn't understand that then, but I did. So you can only believe how hard I go for my team.
I respect that.
Yeah.
And I respect that. For a number of different reasons, but at the same time, I'm gonna apologize not only to you but to all veterans, because I have always denounced the idea of going to war, the idea of fighting for this country that I feel won't fight for me. So you want me to? And I've always had a negative outlook on it. Negative approach. I've always. But to know that somebody close to me who was raised in the same place I was, and who has a lot of the same ideas that I have, would be willing to put their life on the line for this country that we live in. As I'm listening to you talk, it now resonates. I've kind of been disrespectful about it. I'm allowed to have my opinion.
Yes. Thanks.
But I should never discredit the fact that somebody else has a different opinion than mine, and I should respect their opinion.
Yeah.
I've never done that. Like, I've always felt that anybody that includes you, that includes Jermaine, that includes my brother, that includes anybody I know personally that enlisted in the military and went to war, y'all crazy. Ain't no way I'm doing that. For what? These people don't care about me. Now I'm going to go die for you? And yo, nah, I ain't doing that. I'm not doing that.
you dad have allowed me to gain kind of like just like you, Corey, a better respect for the people enlisted in the military. I've gained the respect for them because same thing. My father was in the military, and at a very young age, I can remember him telling me, the military is not for a black man.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our army. It's their army.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've never given enough respect to, I guess, the military by allowing them to change
mm-hmm.
over time. Okay? Just like everything else in our world, it changes. You know, so I've never really given the military the opportunity or, you know, to say, okay, well, they probably changed. Can't be. But I was the same way. I ain't nowhere in the world I'm going to go over there and fight somebody else's war.
No. Let me clarify. Because I still feel the same way about the military. I still feel like, okay, I'm going to leave that like that. Same way about the military. Like, I don't believe it. I don't believe in your bases. I don't believe... I know what you sell us that you're about. But at the end of the day, with open eyes and with using critical thinking, I see something different than what you sell us you're about. So my respect is now not for the military.
For the individual.
It's for your decision going into the military and what you understood you were doing by enlisting.
Yeah.
And by making that pledge or that vow or that whatever. My respect now goes to your decision. And the vibe. I can. I'm gonna say it like this. I can be totally against marriage. I'm not, but I could be totally against marriage, but respect an individual who decides to do it.
That's
the difference. I still don't, man. Military, please.
Well, I get it totally. And I tell you all the time, the military is its own individual world to itself, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's its own world, I mean, it's a matrix controller. Now, inside that matrix is set to be the way they want it to be.
Right.
Now, it ain't by the blueprint, I can tell you that much. I've been there. It ain't built by the blueprint. It doesn't go by the blueprint that has been set for us, which is the Bible. So, then that matrix is wrong. That's just plain and simple.
No, I can't say that. You can say that because you've been.
Yeah. Man, that's what I'm saying.
I can't agree or disagree with that statement. It's not a right or wrong thing for me. It's just a matter of I don't agree with the basis.
And I'm going to clear that up, too, because I'm not saying the military is a bad thing. I'm just saying it's a matrix just like the world would be. So don't go in and don't think you have to have your own solid matrix with your individual understanding, because it can swallow you up, too. It all. I mean, anything can swallow us up if we don't ground ourselves. That's basically what it comes down to. And I'm not kicking the military. I'm telling you, the military was good for me. I always say that. The military did not change me, but the military damn sure was good for me. It was good for me. It was good for me at a time when I needed it. And like I said, I didn't even understand what I was doing. I do now. And I understood it when I was in it. When I was in Iraq, I understood then because I was faced with it. You didn't have no choice.
You know what? I was sorry. We got off on military, so here we go. You know what my dream is? Or one of my dreams? I would love to see what we had once upon a time in the Buffalo Soldiers.
Yeah.
Yes, they were part of the military overall, but it was a unit
mm-hmm.
of all. I would like to see that on the level to where you understand I'm fighting for, no, I'm not fighting. I'm willing to stand and I'm willing to put my life on the line for a cause I believe in. We join gangs.
Mm-hmm.
Under that same premise.
Yeah.
That brotherhood, you know what I'm saying? I die for my brother, I do all this, that. If we were to ever get refocused, keep the same mentality, but just refocus that energy to where now I'm willing to die for what's right.
Yeah.
I'm willing to stand and I'm willing to do all this for what's right for me and my people. Do you understand what...
I'm sorry, but that's why the Black Panther Party was so
dangerous,
right?
To the nation,
and why white America feared them.
That's why Dr. Martin Luther King became so dangerous.
Keep going. Then you're going to get
one. You know what I'm saying?
That's why the black man in general throughout history has been dangerous. Because if they ever unite, I don't care where they are, I don't care what they face, I don't care what we bring against them, we going to lose.
They know that. They knew that. They knew that back in slavery time.
We've seen it in the movie The Matrix.
Yeah.
When he sat down one-on-one with, what's his name, Morpheus?
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to get what he needed from him. Like we said, it wasn't no out of the sky idea why Morpheus was black and the CIA agent or the servant or
the agent
was a white man. You can say what you want. It's not racist. It just needs to state facts.
And it's the truth. I mean, we're not racist on this show.
No.
And this is not for anybody who might be listening of a different persuasion. We have nothing against different races. But why not stand up for what I am?
Yeah. If I can't stand for myself, I can't stand for you either. And then on that point, listen, I understand by being a black male in America today, the struggle. So I'm not going to kick another race. The best I'm going to do is unite you with me. Let's fight this together. So we're not trying to kick nobody.
No.
We're not even trying to kick the masses or the biggest race.
No.
We're not. We want to work with you, too.
They're just confused.
Yeah.
They're just confused. That's all it is.
Afraid.
Man, listen. Yeah. If I don't know. I don't know. I just would like to know how we could go about maybe... Not Black Panther, not Buffalo Soldier, nothing that has already been. But just find a way to implement unity again. To where if it ever came down, then I feel like it would.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down to it, there are some men who are going to stand up and be willing to put their life on the line for the cause.
America would never let that happen. Then you label...
The
Matrix. We never let that happen.
Because
then they just going to label you a militant and say you a threat.
They're
going to say you a threat and they're going to crush it before you even get started. It's too good of an idea.
See, I think that's where the problem. And it's not against you.
Right.
I just think that mindset is where
that's
the problem is.
That's where they turn.
Exactly.
Let me clear this up now.
Go ahead.
I will be the first one to sign up for it. But... going into it, I would have to, before I even get into it, understand what I'm facing.
That's why I say you got to be willing to put your life on the line. It may come down to it.
I'm like,
but just because you kill me,
you
kill me, you're going to have to kill him. You're going to have to kill him. You're going to have to kill him. You're going to have to kill all of us. Because we all came into this with the understanding, just like the military, that one day that might be the sacrifice that I might be asked to do that. But who's willing to sign their name on that thing?
Yeah.
You raise my hand. I sign it.
I'm here. I'm on there. I
for
that,
it. I sign it.
I just told you, I joined one institution with not even understanding what I was doing. But I gave up my all. And damn it, I gave my life. You think I wouldn't do the same for my good Jesus who brought me back here? I'm all in this fight. I do believe, though, and I say this, and I don't say it sparingly, I do believe it has to start within that culture. But for the unification to be solid, everybody has to be drawn in. What happens is, and this is what happened with the Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
Once they noticed it was going outside of Black Panthers, as in our community, and we had a following of other races, No, y'all dangerous.
Uh-huh.
Y'all dangerous. But with knowing that, you got to be able to stand out front, drum major.
That's it.
And keep pushing.
I said it on the level of race.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that army already exists. It's just a matter of we saying now, all of us say, yeah, I join. I enlist.
Yeah.
I'm in. But I would. Because there is an army that was created for that same reason.
Yeah.
We call it different things. We call it by religious names, and we call it...
Remember this?
Yeah.
In the army.
That's where I'm going.
Army of law.
Yeah.
It don't matter about the color of your skin. It just matters about what you believe. I posted something on Facebook a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever. Why can't spiritual people unite and take the world?
Yeah.
That's that army.
That's that army.
That army is already there. Who's going to join it? Why don't we join?
This is my thing. I guess it's just me trying to clear things up. The difference between religious people and spiritual people. There are going to be, all spiritual people going to always, they're going to be in. There may be some religious people that are in, but there's going to be a large portion of religious people that would not be a part of it. To me.
Okay.
Simply because, just because you're religious don't mean you're spiritual.
Right.
As far as my definition goes.
I understand.
Because I am spiritual and I'm not religious. So they don't necessarily coexist to me. Because I know a lot of religious people that I question their spirituality. You know, people are make mistakes and they stumble and they fall. You know, what's the song? How the song go? Can't think of it right now. But anyway.
What's that, when I fall down but I get up?
There you go.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm going off a little too much.
No.
You know, I know this is supposed to be Black history and not religion, but that's just how I feel.
You can't separate the two.
Yeah, it's not.
Spirituality.
Right. Exactly.
You can't separate Black and spirituality.
Can't.
Not to me, you can't. It's impossible.
No. It's our foundation. It's what got us through. If you look at an older movie or older documentary, anything, and you see slaves in a field, a cotton field, the first thing you hear is them singing, and they singing to the Lord. They singing to the Lord. So it's always been that. It's even when they go home after their days of picking in the fields, and they provide their dinner or doing whatever, they still singing to the Lord. It's never left them, and it never left us. And we still carry it on today.
Like you said, Corey, we're spiritual people.
Yeah.
We're spiritual people. Now, I'm going to talk Black history
before.
You know, I know we're not going to go into it, the whole question of Africa.
Right.
But we're just going to say, for the general masses, we're from Africa. We didn't know anything about Christianity.
No.
We had our own God that we prayed to because we were spiritual people. So even when we came to America, I don't even like to use the word came. Once we were drugged into America and someone else's God was placed on us, we still found spirituality within that religion to push us forward to even survive.
Yeah.
And that's why in my opinion, that's why it's so hard to be, quote unquote, Christian.
Yeah.
Right. We try to be it. We want to be it because some of it lines up with spirituality. But then again, some of it, because it's so religious, it's like it's impossible. You asking me to be something that's impossible.
Yeah.
How can I do that? But like you're saying, once you in Rome, you have to do what the Romans do. You can't fight against, now you can, but then they couldn't fight against what they was taught.
Mm-hmm.
Because they died.
Yeah. They took it and they did it just like an invention. They used what they gave. They took the religion that was handed to them and brought their spirituality into it. That's pretty much how this sums up. What happened over the years, the spirituality and religion was mixed and was passed on. So much so now that we're confused.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know it's a difference. You think I can say I'm spiritual and you saying in the same thing I'm religious. Well, no. You think you can say I'm spiritual and be spiritual, but you carry out religious ways. You can't do that. Because religion is set up on tradition. I'm just going to be real with you. Traditionally this, traditionally that. Okay, I get that. That's cool. Some traditions are good. Some traditions have their place. Everything has a place. But spirituality is you in that moment with God. I can't tell you what that is tomorrow. I can't tell you what that is today. I can tell you what religion is today and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's the difference. How you can do that and tell me you're working through spirituality when God comes when he wants to come. Now, this is your talking. This religion's talking. I'm using, but when you try to reason it and make sense of it, you come back to it has to be spirituality. That's why I'm spiritual. I agree with you, Bob. I'm totally spiritual. I'm so much spiritual too, I get upset sometimes with religion, and I should because I'm spiritual. So I see my flaws.
Why do you feel like you should?
Because I think in a spiritual manner, it shouldn't bother me because spiritually I know where I am. So I shouldn't be so concerned with it and figure out you do what you need to, continue to lead your path in the way you lead it, and religion will work itself out. I put it there for a reason. And I believe God did. I believe everything we encounter and everything we see is there for a reason. Now, the fact that spirituality came with our culture and it's still here, that's a reason too.
This war we talk about fairly often. I'm now coming to the understanding that this war is going to come down to spirituality versus
religion. Yeah. That's the war.
That is the war.
That's how you understand. Religion is matrix. Spirituality is God. The only way you're going to get your own matrix to understand a matrix exists is to have spirituality. If you don't have nothing inside of yourself or understand inside yourself intrinsically, you will always live in tradition.
I can understand your anger when you said that it makes you angry.
Yeah.
Because you have these religious people saying that they're spiritual and they're not even acting.
Yeah.
They're not even playing a role.
You look at me like, huh?
It upsets me because, you know, people just assume because you're religious, you're spiritual. But you're not living your life.
Go back for a second. You say you see religious people who claim to be spiritual but not playing the role. What is their role? I know I put you out there.
That's okay.
Yeah, he's making me think. He's taking on though. And that's good.
The role a spiritual person plays is, and Dad, you say this all the time, love.
Yeah.
Understanding. You know what I'm saying?
Love.
Giving nature. You know what I'm saying? And there, I can see religious people that do not or portray whatever they portray. They're not portraying love to me. Mm-hmm. Love don't talk about people. Love don't put people down. Love doesn't. It's not self-seeking.
It doesn't keep records of wrongdoing.
Doing.
Yeah. It's kind. Okay. It's patient.
It's God.
Yeah.
That's God.
It's God. That's it. That's it.
And I don't want to seem like I'm attacking people, but...
You are. And that's okay. You know why? Because you're standing up for your heart.
Yeah.
That's okay. No army is good just on the defensive.
And I don't know necessarily he's attacking people or if he's explaining where most religious people may think it's okay. Now, but when explaining to them in a way or manner of saying, now, I'm not so much attacking you. I'm pointing out some things you may want to look at. Because if you're spiritual, and if you are truly believing you're spiritual, you should want to know what spirituality is. So if I point out some things in religion that may make you question it, you should go inside of your spirituality.
It is what spirituality is. A twisted mind like mine, right? Spirituality is I know absolutely nothing, but I trust in everything.
Yeah.
I believe in everything. I can't explain to you what I should be doing, what I'm going to do, how I can't explain that to you because if I can, then that means that I'm leading it. So I can't tell you how you should be. I can't tell you what you should think. I can't tell you what you should feel. Because sometimes I don't even know why I feel the way I feel. All I know is that I trust in something that's bigger than myself. And the difficult part of that is I have desires. I'm human. I have desires. I have wants. I have goals. I have all of that. If I pray for my desire and it doesn't come, at some point I have to accept that maybe my desire ain't it. Religion tells me that faith will get you what you want. You pray, you believe, you do this. You do that, you fast, you tithe, you whatever, blah, blah, and he'll hear you. Eventually, it'll happen. Secular people have that same mindset. People that don't consider themselves religious or spiritual understand the power of the mind, understand the power of belief. If you believe something long enough, you can will it into existence. So, is that really God? Or is that me just tapping into the power of, that he's given, I'm going to say it this way, is that me using faith but calling it something else?
Yeah, it's you labeling something that you wanted to be what you wanted to be, faith. Because faith is, like you said, I can't do nothing. I know nothing. I'm going to allow God to guide my steps. And whatever he gives me, I'm okay with it.
That's the power of faith, though, that somebody who does not even recognize God, faith still works for them. That's how powerful faith is. That's why it's so hard to get.
I bet you this much. You can talk to an atheist, and I'm not totally informed or educated on atheists and their beliefs, but I bet you somewhere or some walk in their life, since they've been an atheist, they done said, I had faith that that would work.
Yeah, I believe.
I believe that would work. Now, where that come from? That's spirituality.
That's what it is.
That's spirituality. And that's the understanding that I get now. For years, I wanted to be religious. I wanted to be a Christian. That's what I wanted to be. That's what I tried to be. That was God's way. Then he came to me quietly. He said, hey, wow. And I humbly did. And ever since, I listened.
But you can't explain nobody else how you get there.
No.
You can't direct somebody else to that.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I can't give that to you.
I can't give it to you.
He gave it to me.
Right.
And that's the only thing I can tell you with. But I can tell you this much. He's there. And he's coming. You got to be open to him. You have, and we say this all the time, like, you know, we can fight what we want to fight. And we can do what we want to do as long as we want to. But that moment when you understand I have to give it all to you and just let it go, it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, especially when you talk about we 35, 34, 36 years old. You talk about I'm praying. But you're talking about people that's been doing something for 30-some years. I'm just going to automatically stop.
I know that it worked.
Yeah.
It has at some point worked.
I'm watching it work in someone around me. I've seen someone, just what they've done and how they've exemplified themselves, show me that it works. And I know what I'm doing ain't working, but I still can't stop doing what I'm doing.
It's almost impossible.
Yes, it comes.
It's only possible with.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only way it's possible. Yeah.
And you can go in a circle forever trying to figure that out. You can go, I did it
entire lifetime.
16 years.
Yeah.
And we'll still be doing it now if he wouldn't have came to me. But I always tell people, I never loved him. God never loved me. I loved him.
Yeah.
And that's the only reason I'm here today. And because he did it, and I had it embedded in me as a child, regardless if it was to be a Christian, I always had a connection with God. When he came back, I was open. I knew him. It wasn't like he was just inducing himself. I always knew. Yeah, I knew it, and I knew I had been not following him. Nobody else might have knew that because I was saying, like Bone say, I'm religious. I'm a Christian.
I'm a Christian.
I'm spiritual. I say all of it because I didn't know it was a difference. And they go along with what I say. Because maybe in that moment, I'm showing them what they think that entails. You know what I mean? But
you got to make this thing personal, which I always do.
Yeah, go ahead.
It is what it is. I've come into the understanding of the difference in religion and spirituality. I understand spirituality. I'm that person that finds it difficult after so long of doing it the way I wanted to do it and seeing it work, that it's now almost impossible to not. How do I not attempt?
To do
you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you not attempt to do it? How? See, I'm that person.
Yeah, but the thing is, you saying like attempt to follow God or attempt to...
The attempt to make it happen. Those beliefs and all of that are connected to spirituality, that are connected to the good, that are connected to... It ain't even about me. I just want to see this work for the greater good.
You're right, right.
But I can't make it happen. And it becomes frustrating because you want to do something that you know is going to benefit somebody else. And why wouldn't this work? But it ain't working.
But you know, and that plays into spirituality too. Because if you understand spirituality, which is your personal relationship with God, you understand everybody has theirs too.
Right.
So for me, I try to tune mine. I said the other night, I'm polishing myself to present myself to the Lord when I get there. So, and that I understand, I'm not perfect. But I also know there's some things that if you watch close enough, if you close enough to me, you might pick up on. And I think that's the only way to do it. We can get out front, and we can set a standard, and we can show the standard. But some people ain't going to never get spiritual, the true spiritual.
I'm sitting and I'm watching this, and I've been listening to this conversation for the last 15 minutes. Now, we've been on for a little bit, hour, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not until we crossed over into this conversation that it started just flowing. You know, like we were on Black history. And of course, like I said, it's hard or almost impossible to separate Black history or Black people in general from spirituality. I feel, this is my personal opinion here, this topic is what it thrives for each one of us individually. We can go here and we can stay here because we never got back to the topic. And the topic didn't even matter no more because we got here. And that's cool.
Yeah.
That's okay. What that tells me is that burning is there. That drive is there for this. You don't have to tell your spiritual. It comes out. You don't got to say that. For those who look at and can't understand DJ, what they do know is DJ is accepted something else is in control. If I don't understand nothing else, I know he's now gotten out of tune himself. Hopefully, that's what they can say. I can't say what nobody else can say.
I agree.
I can't help but agree. It's true. So, I mean, can't speak on what someone else may see. It's a good feeling if someone does see that, because then that shows change that is visible that I already feel in myself. But like you said, it's that personal thing. You can't explain it to somebody else. I can't sit here and tell you, well, you need to do this first.
Yeah.
And then do this. You know, and then when you find the time, do this. I can't give you a step-by-step step-by-step blueprint to it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's only one blueprint.
Yeah.
You say it all the time. There's only one blueprint. That's the box. I don't even read the box. And I feel like I found spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I may read over a couple of, you know, verses here and there, and I'll find what I need within it. But I personally feel I find what I need to build on my relationship with God through life experience.
You have enough to sustain you for where you are right now.
I feel like I have enough to sustain me for the rest of my life, and I'm only going to get stronger.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could choose to pick up the Bible tomorrow, and I'm sure it'll help me, but I feel like that steamroll effect or that snowball effect is what I'm looking for. It's already started.
Yeah. And you know what, to piggyback off going, that's totally true. The once it kicks in, it kicks in. It just takes off. Once you're rocking with God, you're rocking with the best. That's just simply how it works. And it's a beautiful feeling. And I know you can hear it in my exhilaration in the way I talk and when I speak about God. And I always say this. I'm the most comfortable in my life is when I'm expressing my joy and my love for God. Because that's the one thing I know without a shadow of a doubt I have. You can't take that from me. So I enjoy doing that. But I'm gonna hit on what you said, see, when you was like, we got off the topic. You know what? Because we making history right now. Some history ain't got to be told after the fact. Some history don't have to be in a book. Some history is in live form. And right now, this is historic. With three young black men sitting down talking about something that's so embedded in us and burns in our soul so much, we want to explain it. And we don't have no fear in doing it. And most of the time, when you're dealing with Christianity, religion, and spirituality, it's this taboo that says, I ain't going now. Why not? If you believe God, you love God, why not? If it's your wife, you're going to tell everybody about her. If it's your son, he may cover age, you're going to put that somewhere. If it's your daughter and she has children tonight, you want me to come to the game. But when you tell me God has saved your life, you can't sit here and talk to me about Jesus? Come on, man. Let's be real. Let's be real about it. This is history. This is historical. You don't see this. So God makes his own history, and he makes it in his own time.
I asked the question 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago about, you know, what do you do or how do you accept the fact that it ain't for you to do, blah, 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 blah. My answer just came in thinking military.
Mm-hmm.
You have different ranks in the military.
Yeah.
Right?
Chains of command.
Different chains of command, ranks, whatever you call them. I'm not military lingo, but different positions require
mm-hmm.
different training
yeah.
because you have different responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
right? So whereas E4, I hear y'all talking in
mm-hmm.
numbers and letters. I don't know what E4 is.
Special. It's the fourth highest rank in the military.
E4, I'm assuming,
mm-hmm.
is not going to have the same training / trial /
mm-hmm.
test as E7.
No.
E4 can get to a place and never, they can master their training and I'm good at E4, I can handle E4.
Right.
Because they were never meant to be E7.
Right.
What I'm saying is, in spirituality, I feel like it's the same way. Whereas one person may get to a certain place
mm-hmm.
in their spiritual walk and never go through a different test.
Mm-hmm.
Never go through a test that requires much more faith than it took for them to get to that place. You may have another person who it seems as though they're not a spiritual person because they don't have the same faith you have.
Mm-hmm.
You see your faith working for you, but their faith ain't working for them. So it seems. No, it could just be that maybe they want to E7, and this is something totally new for them, and it's not a matter of faith, and it's
mm-hmm.
not a matter of patience, and it's not a matter of anything else other than you got to walk through this because of where you're walking to. They're not walking the way. Yes, they're spiritual. Yes, I'm with them, and I'm going to use them for what I'm using them for, but I got something different to use you for that's going to require a lot more from you. So in saying that, I'm saying, even in spirituality, we can sometimes be discriminatory.
Or yeah.
We can discriminate.
Yeah, that's true.
Based on our understanding.
Yeah.
Our understanding is only for our walk.
Yeah, that's true. That's totally true. That's totally true. And but to that point, OG, I will say most spiritual people won't be as condescending or condemning
mm-hmm.
as you see in religion.
Mm-hmm.
Because they understand it's an individual thing. So you might have some that, and I can't speak for all, and I may have fell into it myself before where I may try to not so much put my ideas of what God gave me on you, but lead you in the way I would.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Not so much telling you how to do it, but just giving you advice that would be what was for me. And I get that. But
I think at the end of the day, it comes back to, and it may be just
yeah.
for me to understand in this conversation, it matters not what somebody else's walk looks like. It matters not where their walk takes them. It matters not whether they are actually walking. It does not matter. It doesn't matter one iota. All that matters is that you trust that your walk is being guided by somebody who can see further than you.
Yeah, yeah.
And wherever you walk, believe he's there.
That's it.
Regardless of whatever else may go on, how it looks, how it feels, what you hear, what you see, what you don't, what you think, what you know, none of it matters. trust your walk, trust the leader of your walk, do what you're told to do when you get there.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I understand.
I totally agree with that. And I think that's a good point that you made, to point out that everybody's spiritual walk won't be symbolic of each other's. You know what I mean? Just because I went away, don't mean Bones going to be the same way.
No.
Me and his may be similar. That doesn't mean the third person out is going to be different. It could be UT or it could be anybody else. It could be three me and Bones, but that means it could be four of them different. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is, like you say, when you get down to it, if you get spirituality, that's the good part.
I think I wanted to say this the first time, but it slipped my memory. The understanding part. We try to understand, especially for people that we care about.
Yeah.
I want to understand what's going on with you. What I should be trying to understand is that it's not for me
to understand. Yeah.
All I need to understand is that you believe what you believe.
Yeah.
And where you are is where you're meant to be. However I can help you, I will help you. That's all I need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible for me to understand your walk. It's impossible.
I would say that would be hard for people that care about you. I can see it.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
See people that care about you, and they see something. It would be hard for them just to accept what they see without understanding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we can even say, if we look back on it ourselves, pre-spirituality, our understanding, which is anywhere it's going to get to, but
mm-hmm.
it's more of an understanding now, we were the same way.
Yeah, had to go through the same way.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't know what you're talking about. I can't feel what you're talking about. You feel. Give me some. That's the first thing you ask. Give me some of it. I can't hand it to you. And now I understand that once you get it, it's not to be given out by an individual. It comes to God.
That's it.
That's no more, no less. That's it.
All the encouragement I can give you. I can help you. But I can't tell you anything other than that. I enjoy this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I say it out to everyone. We started out with Black Inventors. So I'm glad the stuff y'all brought in. A lot of it I didn't know.
Yeah.
Elevator, looking at them different.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff I'm looking at. When I get in there, go buy me some potato chips. I'm going to eat them with a little bit of pride.
Yeah.
Not really a potato chip either, but I'm craving a bag of chips right now. I mean.
Yeah.
Black history, every day you wake up is being made.
Yes.
365 Black history.
And it should be appreciated.
Let's make history pop. Let's continue to strive and do the things that we need to do. Hey, once we're gone, we're gone. Like as Mama Boyd always say, when you're dead,
you're dead, you're done.
When you're dead, you're done. And I tell y'all all the time, man, we don't know when our time is coming. But I do believe history has told us you are only historical once you're gone.
So with that being said, do you believe every day you walk this earth, you make a history?
I believe if I'm alive and I'm breathing, it's historical.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it. I believe that. And I believe that with everything in me, and I didn't at the time, and I wasn't doing nothing. Now that I know that, I'm conscious of everything I'm doing. I'm going to make it count. I'm going to make it count. Everything I put my hand in, I'm going to make it count, because you never know.
That mindset alone, accepting the fact that every day I'm alive, I have the opportunity to make history.
Yeah.
It changes your dynamic. It should.
Yeah.
Change your dynamic.
That's why I said to you, like, we got off the topic. I was like, I don't care. We're making history. I understand the impact of what's going on here. I say it all the time. I'm going to continue to say it. We will change the world. We will be fishers of men. And I believe that. God told me that. Just like he came into me and told me to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm going to continue to do. God has a plan for all our lives. All we have to do is humble ourselves to him and follow. He will take care of the rest. It's that simple. I'm good now. I'm good. I always say that. I say, God is good. I'm good. That's all that matters. I'm good. I don't want to be great. I don't need great. Because God is good. So what I need great for? I'm good. I'm good, man. I'm good.
Amen.
You don't need great.
Yeah, I don't need great, man. I don't need great. I think that's a lot of times where we miss out on the understanding of what we really have. You're reaching for something you will never achieve anyway. Be good. God is good. Why wouldn't I want to be like my father? Even in the earthly sense, we tend to follow behind our fathers. I'm definitely following by my heavenly father because I'm practicing on earth to live with him forever. It's a dress rehearsal, man.
That being said, I see y'all a win.
Be better, man. That's all I'm my sign off. You know, just strive better, you know, tomorrow than you were today.
That's it, man. That's it. We hope y'all enjoyed the Black History. As always, we'll try to bring something else back, get it in there. We kind of deviated in the end, but when God moves, we let him walk. We don't get in his way because we've learned that ain't really what's best for us, you know. We tried it our way and it don't work. With that being said, lock your doors and open your hearts to the Lord. It's hard, but it's fair. One love, JWJ. Boys in unison, T-O-A-B-I.
I'm living life the same old way. Trial slowly eating away at me. I need a touch from the Lord today. Oh, revival. We must reconcile. I wanna be like Jesus. Deliver, set free. How can I reach out to someone else when I ain't got it together myself? I'm just stuck playing the cards I was dealt. In my heart, I'm crying out for help. I'm looking for purity, self-control and immunity. Said I wanna be like Jesus, deliver. Set free.
Better than I was
before.
Oh Lord, please start over.
Give
me those things I need. More of you,
more of you,
more of you. More of your love, your strength, your mercy. More of your peace, what I need. Better than I was.
Now that I have more.